Welcome to Pick Up and Deliver, the podcast where I pick up my audio recorder when I drop my kid off at school and deliver an episode to you while I walk home. I'm Brendan Riley. Good morning, listeners. I hope that you're having a pleasant October. It is Monday, October 29th, and it's a brisk bit of sunny weather today in suburban Chicago. My nose is a little chilly, so hopefully I won't sniffle too much and be an obnoxious podcaster. But we are entering the chilly season, so it's a plugged nose and sniffy kind of season. So it was a good weekend for gaming. I will share more of that in later episodes. In fact, later this week, it'll be the end of the week, will be November 1st, so I'll share a top of the stack update along with what we've been playing. But I did want to share two things, which lead me to my episode subject for the day, and that is cooperative goofs. So I've mentioned before a number of times that I really enjoy playing a lot of different games, and the result of that is that often I have to review or reread rules before we play a game again, even if I've played it before, because it won't have been played for a long time, or, you know, I learn a whole bunch of new games. I mean, I've got 8 or 10 new games this month, and so a game I haven't played for a year and 10 months, I maybe have to review the rules a little bit, especially if it's kind of finicky. So in that regard, it was with excitement but also a little trepidation that we busted out A Touch of Evil this weekend. Now, A Touch of Evil is one of my favorite thematic games. It's goofy and fun and full of theme. The art is hilarious. I really enjoy it. If you haven't played it, it's a 16th or 17th century mystery game where you play investigators in a colonial town called Shadowbrook, where something evil has come and is menacing people. There are town elders that are all sort of colonial types, and they each have a secret. Some of them are evil town elders who are actually working against the good of the town, and others will have secrets that either make them actually helpful, or some of the secrets make them bad, but just not really that bad. So, one of the town elders' secrets that we revealed this last game was he's a peeping Tom, which doesn't put him on the evil side. It's a little secret, as the game calls it. So in the game, you play investigators trying to find and dispel the evil thing. Now, we almost always play on the co-op version because it just thematically doesn't make sense that we'd be competing to find and dispel the evil thing. That's silly. We much prefer to play the co-op version. So this time we were playing against a villain we haven't played before, the Banshee, which was fun, but could have been more fun if we had gotten the rules right. And that's what I want to talk about today. I'm interested in talking a little bit about what happens when you're playing a co-op and you screw up the rules. What do you do? What's the experience like, and so on. So I made two major rules blunders in getting ready for this game of A Touch of Evil. The first rules blunder was that I did not give the enemy enough hit points. And that didn't really become an issue until we went to fight the enemy at the end. The enemy should have had, the enemy started with, I think, 9 wounds, so the enemy should have had 27, plus the enemy earned another 5, I think, so it should have been 32, should have been 32 wounds that the enemy needed. Unfortunately, I forgot the rule that the enemy's hit points get bigger, and in fact, you add those hit points on again for every investigator in the game. So if the enemy has 9 and you are playing 3 people, which we were, it should have been 27 hit points. I screwed that up. And as a result, we won really easily when we finally went to fight the bad guy. However, I think we probably would have won anyway, because my wife was the first attacker and she was the weakest of the three of us, and she got 12 hit points off of the enemy. And with 3 of us playing, that averages out to 36, except that my character was going to get more damage than hers was, And my daughter's is probably gonna get the same, so we're probably gonna get 40 points of damage, assuming the dice roll out sort of evenly. And with that level, we would have won anyway. So we did a little less dice rolling at the end than we should have. Along the way, the game was a little drier than usual, and I realized about halfway through that I had forgotten we were supposed to be rolling on the cooperative mystery chart. There's a mystery chart that you're supposed to roll on as part of the mystery phase. You don't just draw a card. You also roll on this chart and something happens and then you draw a card. And about halfway through the game, I realized that we were supposed to be doing that. Now, it's perfectly fair to say, Brendan, you really screwed that up. Why didn't you remember that? Well, part of it is that as much as I like A Touch of Evil, it's got a whole bunch of rules and a lot of different finicky rules that aren't necessarily intuitive. So you have to go look them up. On top of that, the rule book is very poorly organized. And because we have both expansions, I have three rule books to look through. The main one plus two side ones. I'm thinking that I noticed that there's an updated rule book that someone took on Board Game Geek. They took the three set rules and made them into one. Thinking I might print that, or at least see if I can find a reminder guide for the co-op game so that we can remember all the things. That said, before I play this game again, I'm gonna reread all three rule books. And that will at least help me remember all the things so that I don't forget them. But there's just so much to keep track of in the game. It's really easy to mess up and forget things like something particular. I would say also there are elements of graphic design that could definitely have been changed to add to the gameplay. Like for instance, the card that you use to fight the enemies, they get this really nice thick cardboard token or cardboard card. It's maybe the size of two tarot cards put together. It's a really nice thick thing that you use as the main base for the enemy's character. The thing that tells you what they do. Well, on the back it just says enemy or boss or whatever. Like it's just a generic back of the tile. Instead of doing that, what they could have done is put the co-op rules on the back. They could have put, you know, 9 points per player or whatever, so that the graphic design reminded you of this difference in the rules rather than you having to remember it. And that's it. There are a number of things in the game where I think the graphic design could have reminded us of things that we didn't get to know otherwise. So that part was, I put, you know, a little bit of that on the game, but a lot of it on just the fact that I wasn't prepared for the level of memory loss that I'd have about the nuances of the game, which again come from the fact that the game is really finicky. So as much as we did enjoy it, I don't think we enjoyed it as much as we would have if it had been really tight and felt super difficult, which it wasn't, because in part because I was misinterpreting the rules. So the other game we played this weekend where I had a similar problem was a game that I've played an awful lot this year, 22 times I think, and that's Gloomhaven. Now Gloomhaven is one of our favorites. It's become a staple in our game play. We played at least once or twice a month, sometimes much more than that. And so it's become part of our usual play. However, we've started now using the Gloomhaven Helper app to manage the creatures. That the managing of the little hit point tokens on the enemies when you have a whole bunch of them on the board is kind of a pain. And the Gloomhaven Helper app is a really smooth way to do that. It also keeps track of what, it also draws the cards for you, and it just smooths things out a little bit. However, when we were setting up, I did not carefully supervise my daughter as she was populating the enemy cards to reflect the enemies we had on the board. And she did not pay attention to or notice the fact that you can set the level of the enemy that you're putting out. And so the result is that we played enemies on level 0. Which meant that we took hardly any damage the whole game. And you'd think we'd have noticed, but it's been a while since we played. And I guess we just thought things were really clicking. I don't think the game would have turned out much differently than it did, because we actually didn't get hit that often. And the actions the enemies take wouldn't have changed. It's just the power with which they hit us. You don't draw different cards for stronger enemies. They just hit harder when they do hit. And they have maybe some more built-in qualities. So those things together meant that we didn't face the same tough enemies we would have. So we got to the end, we realized what had happened after we finished. And so we just gave ourselves the experience we'd have gotten playing a level zero event, which meant we got hardly any experience. I guess the punishment was apt for my daughter because she needed 5 experience to advance and she only got 4. So she didn't get to level her character up this round. And she was a little sad, and I said, well, you can just take the extra experience point because for me, fun is the central point. And she decided not to. So with that one, it was a relatively small mistake, but had fairly large ramifications. Which gets me to thinking about co-ops particularly, but this happens with all the games, is that the danger of a game where the rules are not intuitive is that the people end up playing a different game than you intended for them to play. That when your rules are not intuitive or the graphic design doesn't support an easy adaptation of the rules or adoption of the rules, then you get this situation where people misinterpret how the game works and they don't play the game as you intended. As a sort of side note, Flying Frog Productions also has a game called Last Night on Earth. There was one time I was playing that with somebody who has played an awful lot of that game. In fact, had all the expansions and is really a big fan. It was the first time he and I had played this game together. It was the three of us playing, and we went to play. And we rolled some dice, and he's like, oh, I win. I'm like, no, you don't, I win. He's like, what are you talking about? And it turned out that in Flying Frog production games, the way the game works is you have to, when you're a human is battling a zombie, you roll dice, and the human has to roll higher than the zombie in order to defeat the zombie. What my friend thought was that you add the human's dice together and then compare that to the score of the zombie's dice added together. The thing is, in an even Steven roll, the zombie's rolling 2 dice, the human is rolling 3. So just on the law of averages, the human is going to win that fight most of the time. And then add into it that the humans can pick up weapons and other things that give them more dice. And the character of the game changes dramatically because the humans can easily fight off the zombies. Well, that's not how the game works. The actual rules for the game say that you roll dice, the zombie rolls 2 dice, the human rolls 3, and you compare the highest number rolled by each player. And the highest number rolled determines the result of the battle. So for instance, if the human rolls a 6, a 1, and a 2, and the zombie player rolls a 5 and a 4, the human player gets a 6, the zombie player gets a 5, and the human wins the battle. Instead, the way my friend was playing was that you add the 6, the 1, and the 2 together, and the zombie adds the 5 and the 4 together. It actually makes sense as a mechanism to, say, add the dice together, but it's just not how the game worked. And so there was this moment where he realized that he'd been playing this game wrong the entire time he'd been playing it, which makes for an amusing, made for an amusing moment in the game. But in terms of a co-op game, it's always interesting to discover you've been playing something wrong, because then you have to figure out, like, do we backtrack and try to fix the mistakes we made? Which my group, the answer is almost never, never that we do that. In our group, the answer is almost always, we're gonna correct the rule and use it the other way in the way forward in a co-op game. Or in a competitive game, we're gonna address, has this changed the advantage for some people? If it has, then we'll undo it in some way, or more often we'll just keep playing with the rule the way we explained it, and we'll put an asterisk by that game for ourselves and know that in future we need to do it correctly. But the lesson for me of this weekend was that game design is gonna, that it's good to think about those edge case rules, or the rules that aren't incredibly intuitive, to think about how do you build your game so that the players can figure out the rules and remember them so they don't play the wrong game. So drop by Board Game Geek Guild 3269 and let me know what your experience is trying to figure these things out. Have you ever messed up a co-op in a big way or even a competitive game? I'd love to hear from you. Well, that's it for me. Thanks for joining me on my walk today. I hope your next walk is as pleasant as mine was. Bye-bye.
Brought to you by Rattlebox Games.